Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 809. It's the 23rd of June, 2017. On the podcast today, I have private investor Smudge Dan talking about the following stocks: Braveheart Investments, BRH, Flying Brands, that's FBDU, Ariane Silver, AGQ, plus Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, covers the following companies: Patisserie Holdings, ticker there is Cake, Calco, ticker there is Car, and Tertiary Minerals, TYM. I also have Simon French, Chief Economist at Panmure Gordon, talking about the anniversary of the Brexit vote, which is today, obviously, the Bank of England's view on interest rates and whether they're likely to be going up anytime soon, and the week ahead, the macro in the week ahead. Plus, as always, as is a Friday, I'm going to do the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 7 days, and also the top five most liked RNSs over the last 7 days too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is successful private investor Smudge Dan. You all right, fella?
Very well, Justin. Thanks. Yes, very well.
And the markets of late, I mean, you know, when you have uncertainty around and the big caps start to, you know, suffer, it trickles down, doesn't it? And what happens is you get a lack of liquidity in the smaller caps. And it just becomes, at the moment, it's a dire place to be, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, the last couple of months, you know, bar a few shares that have done well, you know, the trend has been downwards across the board. So it's been a fairly sort of turgid period, not very many winners, but you know, hopefully we're going to see some sort of improvement. I guess now we're heading towards the summer, which traditionally obviously is a quieter time anyway. Albeit the last year was busy over the summer, and there were some really good gains to be made. So we shall see. But yeah, it's been a tough few months for most AIM investors, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, there's always a couple of winners here because, you know, AIM stocks do move on a bit of news. But generally, it has been a grinding lower. And like you say, there's like summer, you know, it's been like a drought. And like last year, yeah, you know, people thought, I suppose, after Brexit, it would suffer. But it didn't. It went the other way. But we are into that traditional sort of, you know, thought of, I mean, it reinforces that the sell in May. I don't think that it proves out. If you look at the stats, apparently, that is essentially wrong. But there's more chances of big falls in the summer months than elsewhere, I think. But anyway, barring that, Dan, what are you looking at? What stocks are you looking at?
Well, a couple of today, actually, both of which are run by Trevor Brown. Yeah. So the first one is Braveheart Investments, who had their released their annual results earlier in the week, and the thing I like about Braveheart is that you've got several elements to the business, you know, one of which is a fund management business which kind of ticks along. Mm-hmm. And they've also got quite a few investments that, you know, the legacy investments that they've got that they're kind of selling down, and they sold one at a decent profit last year. But the main focus now is that they've got three strategic investments, whereas before they were taking relatively small percentages, you know, 2 or 3% in these companies. So even if they did spectacularly well, they, you know, the returns weren't huge for Braveheart. The new approach that Trevor has taken is to take substantial percentages, you know, up to sort of 40-odd percent in some cases. So in the event that they do well, then Braveheart will do very well out of it.
Yeah.
But so you've got this sort of, you've got this blue sky investment approach, but you've also got a profitable business sort of underpinning all of this. So, you know, looking at the results that released on the 21st of June, bear in mind, we're talking about a company here with a market cap of only £4 million.
Yeah.
You know, they did a profit after tax of £780,000.
Mm-hmm.
That was off of a revenue of £1.154 million. And they've got cash in the bank of £1.421 million as well. So you know, there's not that many shares in issue. There's only about 27 million shares in issue. Trevor Brown himself has got just shy of 30%, which is a recurring theme for him as well. You know, it's always somewhat pleasing to see directors that put their money where their mouth is,
yeah,
and have skin in the game, and he's got that in this case.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it is. I mean, and so what do you think will be the re-rate factor here if it's going to happen, Dan? Because like I said, if you do, you know, it's 4 million market cap, you take the cash off 3 million, they made a profit of 780,000. It's lowly rated, isn't it, really? So what will happen here?
Yeah, just on that alone. But the real kicker here, you know, what's going to push this forward is one of the three strategic investments they've got. So my favourite of the three is a company called Kirkstall, Braveheart own 38% of the company now. They're up their stake in the company, and they have a sort of unique technology which is known as organ on a chip.
Yeah,
and it's basically intended to replace the use of animals in areas of medical research. It's got a particular focus on trying to develop products for applications in drug development and safety testing for the cosmetics industry. So you can imagine, you know, if they managed to pull this off and develop this product to the point where it would make animal testing obsolete. You know, we could be talking telephone numbers here.
Yeah.
So that's my favourite one to do well. But then there's two others as well that he's got. There's another company called Paratech, where Braveheart own 46% of the business.
Mm-hmm.
That's a UK-based scientific instrument company that's developed its own brand of ultraviolet and area imaging detectors. And they're looking to try and license out those products.
Yeah.
So that's sort of ticking over. And then a recent addition they bought this year is a company called Gyrometric Systems, and it basically they have a product which measures the performance of drive shafts in wind turbines, marine engines in ships, and that sort of stuff. So, you know, very, very niche industries, very, very niche, but all of which have an opportunity to be kind of global leaders in each of those.
Yeah, and game-changing tech in each of those niche areas.
Exactly. Yeah. So what you've got is kind of the blue sky potential of these three. But it's not a sort of all or nothing play like a lot of these blue sky things are, because you've got the underlying fund management business, which is delivering a profit.
Yeah,
and this is cash backed as well, so you're not going to get diluted to hell tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you've got a director that's got a lot of skin in the game. So for me, this one really ticks all the boxes.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, cool. And do you know, for a while there, I couldn't get Philip Schofield on my head after you said talking telephone numbers.
Yeah.
Do you remember that game show years ago? And I just could see him with that bank of people behind him or whatever it was.
You definitely don't want him in your head.
No, I know, exactly. And anyway, so what's the other one, the other Trevor Brown vehicle?
Right, the second one today, one that I've been invested in for quite a while now, and recently added some more in the placing that they've just done at 3p, is a company called Flying Brands. The ticker is FBDU.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a main market listed cash shell. They suspended in June last year because they are were planning to do a reverse takeover of a company called Stonechecker. And now what's interesting about Stonechecker is that they have a fairly unique product that basically determines which operation patients should have that suffer from kidney stones.
Yeah.
So there's essentially two operations they can have. One is quite invasive and requires a general anaesthetic, and the other is a lot more straightforward, but it has to be determined which route they can go down. And Stonechecker essentially, in simplistic terms, assists with that calculation. So there's a hell of a lot of information. It's worth reading the prospectus because there's a lot of technical information in there. But what appeals to me about this is that we've got a company at the moment with a market cap of just under £1.7 million.
Okay. Yeah.
And we've got a product here which is unique globally, has a global audience. I think the industry related to kidney stones is over $5 billion a year. And you know, we've got Trevor Brown on board, who, you know, has got a lot of experience in this kind of med tech arena, as we've just seen with some of the investments in Braveheart.
Yeah.
And in addition, has a lot of skin in the game in this one as well. So you know, I like the companies that are really small market caps, and I think this one could do exceptionally well. And I'm anticipating we're going to get some new flow shortly. Obviously, they've just come back to the market. They've just raised about £600,000 at 3p. There's the ability now to buy in actually a shade under the placing price. And I'm hopeful that this year we're going to see double figures on this one, because I'm really hopeful on this.
So essentially, Stone Checker, it checks it to make sure they don't have to undergo that invasive surgery, so they're going to save time, save money. Is that the case?
I mean, exactly. That's exactly it, in simplistic terms. And there's also, and it, so this, this can be sold out to the various different sort of hospitals and trusts globally. They're also developing some sort of app for patients to actually do something themselves. And there's all this sort of health advice that's associated with it. So there's possible sell-on opportunities with other products, other sort of healthy stuff for your kidneys and the like. So I think this will just be the first product that they launch. And I think they'll, once this is up and running and revenue generating, I can see further products down the line. And the other important thing to say is that, obviously, the prospectus was issued a few months ago. They coming back to the market, they wouldn't be able to issue any update immediately, because they'd have to reissue the prospectus. Yeah. But I think, you know, give it another few weeks or so, I'm expecting that we'll see some updates on this, which would really push this on.
And it was spun out, wasn't it, from feedback? Is that right or not?
That's right. Yeah. So the TexRad technology was spun out from feedback. I think, you know, feedback have probably got enough on their plate trying to develop the other lines for TexRad, and there was some outside interests to move this forward for the kidney stones. But Trevor recognised the value of it and bought it into a company that he owned, you know, with the intention of basically then moving it on to Flying Brands, which is exactly what he's done.
Okay, marvellous, Dan. Excellent stuff. Yeah, do you know what? I'm going to look into those. I quite like the sound of those. So anything else worth a mention, or is that it?
No, I mean, I've as you say, the market's been a difficult one. So I'm trying to sort of move more into cash where I possibly can for the summer. But also the other one that I took a large chunk in the placing on was Ariane Silver. I think that offers some really good value, actually, from a relatively low market cap. And market cap still only 2.2 million. You know, it's probably got cash now of about 1.3 million following the last placement. And obviously the drilling for the lithium in Mexico is taking place as we speak. So I think that there's some short-term news flow that's going to be coming in. So I'm hopeful that we should see a really good return on that one as well.
Yeah, marvellous. And Jim was on the podcast, CEO there, Jim Williams, on the podcast a week or so ago, so, you know, worth checking out that. Marvellous, Dan. Listen, have a nice weekend, and speak again soon, fella.
Thanks a lot, Justin. Take care. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You all right, Al?
I'm very good, Just. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. Not too bad. And I do prefer a cooler weather than what we had. I know it's our hobby to whinge about the weather, the Brits.
It is.
It's so changeable.
We have a right. We have an unassailable right to whinge about the weather.
Yeah. Well, I've talked to, you know, a couple of people who've moved to warmer climes and more consistent climes. And one thing they do say, yeah, it's nice weather, but you can't whinge about it, because it's the same every day. It's like boring. Yeah. So we miss that, you know. But yeah, I'm Okay, I'm glad it's cooled down. I mean, apparently 23 degrees is the perfect temperature. Do you know that?
And it feels about right, especially when there's a bit of a breeze too. But I have to say, I was in London Tuesday and Wednesday this week, and travelling up on Wednesday afternoon, I got into an air-conditioned train at Lewes, travelling from Seaford as I do, and got to Victoria, and I got out. It was like getting off a plane at a Middle
in
East
Spain,
airport.
Yeah, or in Dubai or somewhere. No, it's nuts.
It was just unbelievable. It was absolutely incredible. But I'm glad of the drop in temperature. But of course, all this weather is having a massive impact on the geology of the area I live in. As seen the news,
falling apart, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, I literally live about half, three-quarters of a mile from Seaford Head. And, we've had sirens going, all the Coast Guards out. And I believe there was a young lady was found crushed by the debris from the fall, which is very sad. But, two falls. And we were actually out yesterday, and a second fall took place. And there was a huge swirl of dust and clouds and everything else, and the hole at the top of the course is covered in this fine chalk dust. So
if it carries on, Al, you'd actually be right on the coast.
Well, the sea will be lapping at my front door.
The property will be sky high then, as long as it doesn't fall in any further. That reminds me of the plot from Superman 1 is very good, actually. Lex Luthor, you know what he tried to do in Superman 1 was he bought all the land just in from sort of eastwards of California, because there's a San Andreas Fault that runs along California. So he planned to bomb the San Andreas Fault, sink that into the sea, and he'd own all the coastal land then. So he'd remove California, because he'd bought all the land bordering California. And I was like, there's a genius plot there, just bomb the San Andreas Fault, which is right there. And so he'd have prime real estate commercial property there, right on the coast. But of course, he didn't figure on Superman stepping in the way.
So, do you know an explosives expert in the southeast, Justin?
Yeah, exactly.
You got me thinking there. You know,
I know. Yeah. You could start buying up land just on the border there, then shove everything else into the sea, and you'll be a rich
That's
man,
right, yeah.
super rich.
Yeah, seafront properties, and who thought it?
Cool. All right. What stocks are you looking at this week?
Okay, got a couple of picks for you. One in particular I've been looking at, and just an update on another stock. First of all, I want to look at Cake, CAKE, which is of course Patisserie Holdings, owned by the entrepreneur Luke Johnston. Well, I say owned. I mean, he's the driving force behind it. Now, Patisserie Holdings own a number of cake and patisseries, cake shops and patisseries up and down the country. Patisserie Valerie, Drucker's, Baker & Spice, Flower Power, Philpotts. They sell gluten-free food as well, and a whole range of cakes and luxury items that are also resell and wholesale to some retailers. The company announced interims on the 17th of May, and we're due a trading statement fairly soon. Pre-tax up 15%, revenues up 11%, earnings per share up 90%, and shareholders, of course, delighted with a 20% rise in the dividend. 10 new stores, all funded from cash flow, and this is a great thing with this company. It's a great cash flow generator, I'll be focusing on that with the other company we're looking at today as well. Luke Johnston said that they're very confident for the second half of the year and beyond too. The shares are currently trading around £3.25 at the moment. They've been as high as £3.80, as low as £2.53, so market cap of about £330 million. Brokers are pretty positive on the picture too. FinCap have upgraded recently to a 360p target and buy rating. Canaccord with a £4 buy rating, a £4 target and buy rating. But what's of particular interest here is the chart, which has in the run up to the results there was a big spike and it came back down again, but it's consolidated twice at higher lows from the low prior to that that spike. And that's also the line of the 200-day moving average for the stock as well. So I think from a fundamental standpoint and a technical standpoint, this is a really strong play. And of course, Luke Johnson is well respected and well regarded in the city. He knows this business inside out, and all the factors seem to be in place. You've got all the ducks in a row on this one for it to move higher in the coming months and years.
Yeah, exactly. Cake, and you know, I'm trying to look at the chart. So, oh, there we are. So, literally, these data problems we're having recently, have you noticed that? The data, you can't get
volume. Yeah, I know. It's affecting a number of sites, though, isn't it? I think it's just, maybe it's the hot weather, just, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Probably melting everything. All right. Marvellous. Cake, yes. It does seem to be sort of formalized by consolidation there. So, worth a look, worth a test. Maybe worth going in and testing the product yourself, see what you think of it, you know?
Well, that's it, yeah. Have your cake and eat it.
Yeah. Okay, what's next, Al?
Okay, the second one, my colleague Dr. David Paul of VectorVest published this earlier in the week. You may remember we've spoken in the past about a company called Trifast, which manufactures fasteners and lots of little bit pieces that are used in a multitude of applications and industries. This is a company called Carco. The epicode is CAR, C-A-R. This company manufactures technical plastic products for precision engineering, for the automotive industry, for the electrical industry, and so on. It's UK-based, but it's got operations in the US, in the Czech Republic, and in China. Early this month, the full year results were published. Full year pre-tax doubled to 10.5 million from just under 4 million. Revenues were 16% higher at 138 million. And earnings per share rose to 11.5p from 3.3p previously. The chairman was very bullish, exited the year with record intake and pipeline, on course to development, strong improvements in the coming year. And again, this, if you pull the chart up on this one, this has got a very strong looking chart. Dr. David Paul of VectorVest said that the share has been consolidating within a five-wave ascending triangular formation for the last 3 years. And with the growth in the EPS, he believes it's due a breakout and could currently punch higher from its current £1.67 area, as high as £2.40. But again, this is a company that generates a lot of cash. It's highly cash generative. Its earnings growing strongly, and the parts it manufactures are all low cost, high volume parts, and clearly with the operations the company has around the world, it's in a very good position to expand, improve economies of scale, and continue to build it. I can't see this would be a spectacular growth company like a resource company, but if you're looking for somewhere safe to put your cash that'll beat inflation in terms of share price growth and then pay a decent dividend in the process, this is really one to look at.
Marvellous. All right, that's Trifast there. It's one of those companies that I'm sure Carclo. Warren Buffett, what's that, say again?
Carclo, C-A-R.
Oh, sorry, I got confused.
Very similar to Trifast. It's similar in that it manufactures lots of small parts and sells them all over the world.
Trifast. It's one of these companies that, I meant to say same as Trifast, where it's seemingly quite boring, but it's the kind of thing Warren Buffett would love, you know? He said boring is sexy, you know?
Yeah,
okay.
Sexy. Yeah.
What's the next thing then? Al, anything else you're talking about?
Okay, well, I had a meeting with Richard Clemmie earlier in the week. He's CEO, Managing Director at Tertiary Minerals. And Tertiary said earlier in the year they were on the lookout for projects to enter into that would improve the short-term cash flow of the company. He's certainly indicated to me that they're making progress on that front, and it would be great perhaps if we hear something sort of in the next few months. I think progress is certainly being made, so investors who have been waiting for some upside on this will hopefully hear some progress in the not too distant future.
Excellent stuff, yes. Well, we should get him on, you know, because he's been on a couple of times, so we could get him on again.
He has, indeed. We did speak about that, and I said, once everything's in place, if things are moving forward, then you should speak to Justin on the podcast again, and we can, you can explain to the investors what the plan is.
Yeah, I do say you should come on more regularly. He says, yes, he agrees with me, but doesn't come on. there we go.
Well, you all know right. What it is with these CEOs, Justin, you know, flying all over the world to these different locations, seeking out strange new worlds.
Mm. Marvellous. Al, have a nice weekend. I hope your house is still here by the time we speak next week.
I hope so too. But if you can hear the waves breaking in the background, you'll know that the plan is coming together.
Yeah, it'd be amazing if it went mid podcast. I mean, it'd be an awful thing, obviously, to happen. But if it was mid podcast, it'd be tremendous. That would be on the news everywhere. He was mid chat. He was talking about a stock, and all of a sudden, just fell through the floor. Not the stock.
All of a sudden, the waves broke through the front door. Yeah, that's it.
Cheers, Al. Speak next week.
Cheers, Just. All the best. Bye for now.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Simon French, Chief Economist at Panmure Gordon. You all right, Si?
Hello, Justin. Very well, yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. I don't know when the last time we chatted, but it was definitely before the heat wave. And, it seems like a long time ago, doesn't it?
Are you coping, Justin?
Just about. I mean, I know it wasn't as far back as... this is a seamless link. I know it wasn't as far back as the Brexit vote that we had.
Here we go.
because that was a year ago, isn't it?
It was, and it's a good opportunity to take stock, I think, because, it's 12 months on from the vote. And, look, sterling has stabilised in recent months around a sort of 125 to 130 range against the US dollar. A little bit weaker against the euro, as the European Central Bank has indicated it might taper its quantitative easing next year. But I think the news out this week has obviously been the start of negotiations. And then in the last 24 hours, we've had an early bid, let's say, from the UK around the right to remain of about 3 million EU workers currently in the UK. And I think that is will be the focus over the next few weeks of negotiations. And you're hearing quite a lot of businesses saying, if we're going to have a softer version of Brexit than we had prior to the referendum, can it be preserving jobs and access to labour? And I think that's where a business Brexit becomes the sort of preferred terminology rather than hard and soft going forward.
Yeah. What would happen if they just agreed to everything they said? Would we still be in? Yeah, it'd be Brexit. But yes, no, I agree with that. I'll go with that.
It's an interesting question because, of course, if we agreed to everything they said, then, of course, we'd probably remain in the EU. And, of course, you've had Emmanuel Macron, you've had Jutta from the Netherlands, a series of Eurozone politicians saying we'd be delighted if you would reconsider and stay in the club. I think if that is politically unpalatable here, which... increasingly looks like it's going to be the case, then what we'll end up with is some sort of Swiss, Norwegian, EFTA, that is European Free Trade Area type arrangement. But of course, the UK will want a bespoke element of that, particularly for financial services, particularly for its pharmaceutical sector, high-tech manufacturing. So, look, I think it all lends itself to protracted long negotiations, both over the divorce deal and negotiations. And the question is, how much can the UK economy weather that uncertainty? Thus far, the 12 months on, it's done a pretty good job, but there are signs of a cracks emerging, and that really is the question for investors over the next quarter.
Yeah, I think I saw on Newsnight, I think it was, I can't think of the presenter's name now, but he was talking to someone, one of the EU commissioners or one of the big bods in the EU there, and he said to them, listen, so if we agree on all these individual deals going forward in the next 2 years, but then it comes to the stage at the end where all has to be voted on, and one country in the EU doesn't agree on one of them, it all falls apart. Is that the case? And he was sort of saying, yes, it could be that. He didn't really know, but he said, yes, that could be the case.
Well, the obscure Belgian region of Wallonia were in the headlines earlier in the year because they did just what you've described to block, or at least temporarily block, the Canadian trade deal with the EU, which had taken about 8 years to broker to get to that point. And yes, you get a... part of the EU27 saying this doesn't suit us, and tries to hold it up in their domestic parliament. And I think that is a real and present risk. It is impossible for anybody to know which country at which stage will provide that kind of blockage. But it does lead you to the conclusion this will be a protracted process, and it certainly won't be concluded within 2 years. And when we're talking about a new free trade deal, it is probably better to guesstimate towards a decade to get the I's dotted and the T's crossed.
Okay, so look at the sterling, it's fallen pretty much, hasn't it? Pretty much 10% since Brexit. It has stayed around those levels. But this week we've had a few. And I know the last vote from the Monetary Policy Committee was surprising, was it? Three voted to raise rates, didn't they?
That's right. So Ian McCafferty, Kristen Forbes were the two that I guess the market expected. And then you had Michael Saunders, who joined the committee about 3-4 months ago, also voting for a rate hike. That led to some short-term support for sterling on the hope stroke expectation that 25 bip cut that took place in August last year would be reversed. Then this week, we had a series of speakers, starting off with the governor, who said this is not the time to raise UK rates, and everyone went, okay, fine, we don't need to worry. And then, somewhat surprisingly, Andy Haldane, the bank's chief economist, did what was quite a dovish speech, kind of didn't seem to indicate in the first 15 pages that he was about to change his view. And then in the 16th page, he went on to say, by the way, I may well vote for a rate hike in the second half of the year. So again, market somewhat surprised by that one. I think if you read the fine print, which you always, always have to do with an Andy Haldane speech, he's suggesting withdrawing some of the stimulus that was introduced last year. So he's not talking about reversing the QE. He's talking probably about raising 25 basis points and just taking us back to where we were at the Brexit vote, 0.5%. What I don't think any investor should take away is suddenly the Bank of England have become the type of hawkish central bank that will start raising rates as the Federal Reserve have started to do. So, yes, we may get a reversal in last August. No, I don't think we're about to embark on a rate hiking cycle.
And certain parts of the economy are benefiting, aren't they? Because I saw, I think I read in one of my highlights this morning that UK manufacturing is near a 30-year high or a three-decade high, I think.
That's right. Yeah, so those of your listeners with long enough memories will think back to the ERM, the pound falling out of the European exchange rate mechanism back in 1992. That was a big devaluation in the pound, and it led to order books. You're mentioning the CBI order books data hitting an all-time high back then, and we're approaching those levels again, sort of almost 25 years on. And what's happened is obviously the terms of trade have meant that exports have become more competitive. But also the other part of this that doesn't get as much coverage is, of course, it disincentivizes you to buy imports because imports have become more expensive. So the domestic and export order books have taken a real boost from the referendum and the results in falling sterling. And therefore, the big question mark facing both policymakers and those who have an interest in the UK economy is whether that can offset what looks like a consumer just tightening its belt somewhat. The hawks on the Monetary Policy Committee reckon it can. I'm afraid I am a little bit more sanguine, and the manufacturing sector is about 15% of the UK economy. So while it's great news in terms of its scale compared to a consumer that may be more cautious, they are of different scales, and the manufacturing is unlikely to fill the void of a consumer that's keeping its hand in its pocket.
So what do you say? What 15% is it? Is it right about 15?
15% manufacturing in the UK economy. I mean, we talk constantly about financial services, which is about 8 or 9%. We forget that manufacturing is still significant, about 15%. But the consumer spending part of things, retail, leisure, tourism, this is a much larger part of the UK economy. And therefore, a slowing there has a material impact on the growth outlook. Yeah. And that bit must not be lost sight of when you look at what is undoubtedly positive manufacturing data at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, marvellous. Okay, anything else? What's coming up next week? So look out for.
Well, for your listeners looking ahead to next week, there's quite a lot of data out there on consumer confidence. So we get the GfK consumer confidence towards the back end of next week. We also get lending data from the Bank of England on mortgages, mortgage approvals, which ran at about 40,000 per month in April. What will the May data show? And also unsecured lending. So this is credit cards and borrowing and loans. What you're seeing there is a growth of about 8-9% year on year, which has really supported UK growth in the last 12 months. Question mark, is that sustainable? Adding to debt, if it's allowing you to sort of smooth through a period of time of above 2% inflation is fine. But of course, if the jobs market, if confidence starts to go in the opposite direction, then is that debt burden sustainable? The more information we get on that, the easier it will be to call the economy in the second half of the year, which remains fairly sensitive, as I say, to consumer appetite for credit. And that kind of data will be key next week.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. So we'll have a nice weekend and we'll speak next week.
You too, Justin.
Okay, top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 7 days. I do this for two reasons. Fridays has become very quiet on the RNS front. You know what I'm saying? Not a lot going on. Some companies are shut down on a Thursday, by the looks of it, or they think maybe the RNS won't have a lot of traction on a Friday. At five, I gave it away there, didn't I? At five, the fifth most liked RNS over the last 7 days was 88 Energy. That's Ice Wine Tune Operations Update. At four, Premier African Minerals, PREM, excellent metallurgical test work results at Zulu. I can never say metallurgy, metallurgical. I can never say that. Well, I just did, but it's just not correct. I know it's not. And in my head, I got a mental block, and I say it. Metallurgical work. Listen, I think you get the gist, yeah? At three, Talao Energy, director appointment. At two, EVR. Just do my head in that now. It's my head. Metallurgical work. Anyway. At two, EVR Holdings, EVR Edge Global Partnership with Microsoft Corporation. And number one most liked RNS on Vox Markets in the last 7 days was from Talao Energy, first gas to power generation. Sounds like a band Prince is in charge of the first gas to power generation. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. You may have stopped listening halfway through me attempting on the sixth attempt to do metallurgical. Anyway, thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.